An increase in the state excise gas tax has been considered and discussed at length over the past 5 years. Could this be the year it passes? It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio. Last week, the Iowa legislature introduced companion bills in the Iowa House and Senate to increase the gas tax by 10 cents per gallon. Today on the show, we'll take a look back at what Iowa policymakers have said about the gas tax in the past and examine an alternative to infrastructure funding. And Iowa Public Radio State House correspondent Joyce Russell joins the conversation to help us understand the bill's chances this year. That's all coming up after this news from NPR.
This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Katherine Perkins, sitting in for Ben Kiefer. Last week, the Iowa legislature introduced companion bills in the Iowa House and Senate to increase the excise tax on gasoline, also known as the gas tax, by 10 cents per gallon. That would bring the rate to 31 cents per gallon for gasoline and 29 cents per gallon for ethanol-blended gas. Iowa's gas tax hasn't been increased since 1989, but this is not the first time a bill to raise the gas tax has been proposed in the Iowa legislature, and it's definitely not the first time it's been discussed. In fact, as we started talking about putting together this show, we reflected on how many times we've already talked about the issue. Going back to count, we found at least 11 separate shows discussing the gas tax over the past 5 years. So we're going to listen to excerpts from those shows to put this year's proposed gas tax increase in some context. Let's start with the problem. In 2011, Governor Terry Branstad appointed the Governor's Transportation 2020 Citizen Advisory Transportation Commission. We talked with the co-chairs of that commission, Nancy Richardson, former director of the Iowa DOT, and Alan Tomes, former director of the Iowa Department of Economic Development. Here's what they had to say to a listener who wanted to know where all the money from the gas tax was going, since roads didn't seem to be improving.
Iowa's Road Use Tax Fund, which is where these funds go, there's a Time 21 fund and a Road Use Tax Fund. Both of those, by Iowa law, have a formula that distributes those funds to Iowa's roughly 950 cities, 99 counties, and the state DOT. So those funds are being distributed monthly to all those jurisdictions, over 1,000 jurisdictions, for them to use for road projects. The problem that we face in Iowa now is with our 114,000 miles of roads, which makes us 13th nationally among states. We've got the 13th highest number of roads, 5th highest number of bridges, but we're 30th in population. And that's a lot of infrastructure for our population. And all the things we've already talked about in terms of the cost and what's happening to them, the accelerated erosion of our system because of severe weather and age. They were all built in the 40s, 50s, and 60s for the most part, and they all have a lot of needs coming at the same time. You put all of that together and you don't have raising revenues. And so you're spending the same amount of money, but you're not being able to buy as much work with that. So certainly all that money goes out and is used by counties, cities, and the state for road projects. It's just that you cannot buy as much road work with that money as you used to.
You know, we tried to point that out at the beginning about the disparity between the revenues coming in and the costs that are going up. And the other thing, right, we haven't talked about is the increased travel in the state. And our travel's increased like 36%. Between 1990 and 2010. And there's a number of reasons for that. The large truck traffic is up. We've got a different state now. We're moving more corn products in and then out when it's converted to gasohol, ethanol process, the biofuels. We've got big wind production in the state now, and so we're moving a lot of heavy equipment through the form of the windmills within the state. So our economy has changed a lot, and we're creating more use of those roads, and more use is also goes into deterioration of the system.
So to recap, road and bridge construction and maintenance costs have risen, and revenue sources have failed to keep pace. And while the Governor's Commission recommended back in 2011 that the gas tax be increased, It also recognized that as our cars become more fuel efficient, even that revenue source won't be able to keep up. That's why the commission also recommended increasing registration fees for electric vehicles. And we asked whether this was penalizing Iowans for trying to be more fuel efficient.
You have to look at this as, is this a tax or is this a user fee? That vehicle that is riding on those roads is just as susceptible to potholes and everything else, and you can do more damage to your car with bad street systems and road systems than you'll ever pay out in any type of road use fund or that tax that's going into that. So right now, we don't have another way to collect this revenue. People talked about, well, let's go on a per-mile basis. We don't have a way to collect that. The trucking industry does. The user does not. So we get into that type of a situation, and I just think that with people, when they sit back and feel that they want decent roads to run on for their vehicles, that that user fee comes to them, whether they pay it through the tax, the road use fund, or whether they pay through an additional registration fee.
The Iowa legislature adopted some of the commission's recommendations, including increasing registration fees on electric vehicles. But so far, lawmakers have not approved a new revenue source that would cover the gap between needed road and bridge repairs each year and the amount of funding available. That shortfall stands at $215 million annually and has resulted in a maintenance backlog. As of 2013, nearly 21% of Iowa's bridges were rated structurally deficient. In fact, Mike Hadley, a Keokuk County supervisor, told us in 2012 his county is at the point of closing some bridges, and that leads to another set of problems.
A lot of people think, well, these roads aren't needed because farms are bigger, and the problem is when we close one road, that doubles the traffic on another road. And we all know that traffic is heavier, the big farm machinery. And then the type of farming Keokuk County has, and I think a lot of other of these rural counties are, just because Claude and Maude don't live down at the end of the road anymore, it's still we have to get down there to farm their 80 or 120 acres because it's never the same guy that farms the whole section. It's all kind of diversified. So the idea that we can close roads as people leave those roads it's not quite workable. If one guy farmed everything between the roads, that would work out a lot easier, but that's not what's happening. There's one thing, closing the bridges, and there's the old saying that, you know, that you can't get here from there. It does start to create that situation. And somebody said that always sounds like a country and western song, and I say it sounds a little bit more like a blues.
Through the years, counties, cities, trucking companies, agricultural groups, and others have organized to illustrate the problem and lobby on the issue at the State House. They tell stories of routing trucks away from some state roads altogether and warn of the economic consequences of leaving Iowa-made goods sitting on docks with no way to get to customers. But as Governor Terry Branstad took office, he was reluctant to endorse a gas tax increase, and that reluctance extended to his own appointee to the Iowa Department of Transportation, Paul Trombino, who instead focused on the need to find efficiencies and cost savings in his department.
The focus for the department and the governor was trying to make sure the dollars that we have, which is about $1.2 billion that come into the road use tax fund plus additional federal dollars, that we're maximizing those dollars as much as we can. And it's not a discount in any of the efficiency moves that have happened, not only at the department, much less in a lot, that's happened clearly across cities and counties. It's a challenge to us. Can we take those dollars further? And what the department has done, I think that we've demonstrated that there's an opportunity for us to take those dollars further.
That call has been echoed by critics of a gas tax increase, including Americans for Prosperity, a group that has contributed heavily to political campaigns, not just in support of candidates they agree with, but against candidates they don't support. The group has not supported a gas tax increase in the past, and they do not support a gas tax increase this year. This is Mark Lucas, former Iowa State Director for Americans for Prosperity, talking about ads run against Democratic Congressman Leonard Boswell in his race to represent Iowa's 3rd District. The ads featured clips of Boswell talking about increasing the gas tax, and Boswell lost the race to Republican Congressman Tom Latham.
That should be a pretty good blueprint for any politician to look at to say, trying to raise the gas tax is not politically expedient. And also, it's just not my crowd. So Des Moines Register conducted a poll that showed that 63% of Iowans do not support a gas tax. It's bad politically, and it's just bad policy. I think it's really unfortunate that we're focusing today on the gas tax when we need to focus on, you know, long-term, meaningful property tax reform, income tax reform. These are the type of things that will bring prosperity to Iowa, and we can solve this problem with transportation by setting priorities. But the first thing that we need to do is relieve the taxpayer of these burdens that they're seeing every single day.
So as debate begins on this latest proposal to increase the gas tax, we're in the same place that we've been for the past 5 years. We'll talk more about what, if anything, makes this year's debate different from previous years with IPR State House correspondent Joyce Russell in the second half of the show. But first, are there any alternatives to a gas tax increase? Well, yes. In 2011, the University of Iowa conducted a study on the federal level that found participants supported charging people for the miles they drive instead of the gas they use. But figuring out how to track that mileage and bill for it is tough. So the idea needs angry consumers to push it forward. Paul Hanley, director of the Transportation Policy Program at the University of Iowa's Public Policy Center, says people believe they're paying a lot of taxes at the gas pump.
You know, one of the points that I always bring up in our focus groups, and we've talked to thousands upon thousands of people throughout the United States, is that we don't really realize how much we pay within fuel tax. Now, the average vehicle in the United States getting 24 miles per gallon pays about $125 per year for using the road system, and that's the federal rate. And the state rates pretty much double that. So you're looking at $250, less than $20 per month. A lot of times when we realize that, some of the issues go away. Many times I open up my discussions by asking, how much do you think you pay? And a lot of times the audience responds thousands of dollars. And when they do realize it's less than $200, there's a sigh of relief.
And when drivers find out they're not paying thousands, they're not clamoring for another method to pay for infrastructure. But remember, our cars are becoming more fuel efficient. So even if we increase the gas tax, eventually it won't keep pace with increasing road and bridge maintenance costs. Another state is taking a longer view. Oregon is starting a pilot program to see if charging drivers per mile will work. For now, Oregonians are paying the gas tax at the pump. But those who install electronic devices to track their mileage will have the tax credited back against a bill for 1.5 cents per mile driven. Jim Witte is manager of the Office of Innovative Partnerships and Alternative Funding at the Oregon Department of Transportation, and he joins me now to tell us more about it. Hello, Mr. Witte. Thanks for talking with me.
Well, I'm happy to do it.
So tell us how this system is designed to work in Oregon.
Well, we've tested it a number of different ways, and we kind of ended up, after listening to the public a lot and taking into their concerns, to design it so that they have choices for how they report their miles. And in Oregon, it'll be an electronic choice because we don't have an annual vehicle inspection that allows us to know what the odometer says. But there are a number of ways to do this, and in Oregon, there'll be people be able to report their miles driven without any kind of vehicle location capability, without any GPS, just all miles driven. They'll be able to do that. Or if they have a reason to want to exclude miles off of public roads or out-of-state travel, they could use a GPS device. But it's their choice. The government is not going to make them use it in any fashion. They also get to choose their technology from the marketplace, and there's many ways to report miles already, and some of them are already built into the cars. If anybody has used OnStar or Ford Sync, they'll know that that's the kind of technology that could be used for this purpose. So there's just a number of ways, and we're actually starting the program, the final program, in July, we'll have 5,000 volunteers that will join us and then report their miles. They'll get a bill in the mail or by email, their choice. They'll be able to choose their provider. They could choose the government, or they can choose a private sector entity that we're contracting with, actually several of them. And so they get to choose how they do this, and that's the most important thing, is that it's not they're not being directed to do it any one way.
So this isn't something that's been fully implemented yet, is that right?
We've done two pilot projects, and then the legislature directed Oregon Department of Transportation to enact to implement a fully operational system in July of this year. And then we'll start with 5,000 volunteers. And if everything goes well, the legislature will apply it to a mandated group of taxpayers at whenever they're ready.
So it sounds like with a number of choices, you've got a number of concerns to try to address. So if people want to report their mileage on their own, you have to worry a little bit about evasion, right? People fudging the numbers?
Well, yeah, if it was kind of a manual approach, yeah, that's the problem. Everybody wants fairness. They don't want to have some people cheating and other people not. So we have to make sure that everybody can report numbers accurately and not try to befuddle the system.
So how are you addressing that problem?
Well, we are certified. What happens is that contracted with several private sector firms who provide mileage reporting devices as options to the motorists, but ODOT is certifying all of those technologies. We have requirements for security, for accuracy, for protection of privacy, and all of that. And the whatever technology is proposed by the private firms has to be certified. So that will guarantee that they won't people won't be able to cheat very easily.
Ah, I see. So they have to install some kind of device that will report that mileage to you.
Right. In Oregon, right. Now, but in other states that collect the mileage number annually, they could use that number now. There's a number of states like that. Texas is like that. California, Hawaii is like that. And so they wouldn't have to necessarily have a mileage reporting device in their car if the state already collected that miles, the miles once a year.
I see. So do you have any numbers that can help you determine whether the average person would pay more or less than they would if you just taxed them at the gas pump?
Well, I can sort of give you an idea. The rate is set at 1.5 cents per mile in Oregon. And that will replace the gas tax. So anybody involved will get a gas tax refund, or it'll be offset, and so they won't pay both. And the 1.5 cents was set at what the average motorist pays in fuel taxes in Oregon. We have a 30-cent fuel tax, and the average motor vehicle gets around 20 miles per gallon. And so if you divide 20 into 30, you get 1.5 cents. So cars that are above 20 miles per gallon would pay a little bit more. Cars below would pay less.
So what's the argument against increasing the gas tax to help fund infrastructure? Why didn't you just go that route?
The gas tax probably should be increased in the short term, but in the long term, we know that the vehicle fleet's changing, and it's becoming far more fuel efficient. And there are cars on the road like the electric vehicles and the hybrids that really don't pay much for the road, or maybe nothing for the road system. So as the car shifts more to that type of, as the fleet shifts more to that type of vehicle, the road funding is going to basically dry up and become much less. And it's going to be the people that have the fuel inefficient vehicles, the big ones, they're going to be carrying the load. And even while the revenues are going down. So the Oregon system is not designed so much for right this moment. It's designed for a little bit later when our vehicle fleet is more fuel efficient.
Interesting. But isn't one of the shortcomings in this new system the fact that Oregonians are going to bear the entire cost of road and bridge maintenance? I mean, at least with a gas tax, you might be able to count on some drivers from out of state helping to foot that bill.
Oh, and that'll stay the same. The gas tax would stay in place for anybody not paying the per mile charge.
Ah, I see. Okay, so you tax the fuel for out-of-state visitors, but not for Oregonians.
That's right. Now, someday when say, a region is all doing the same thing, they're all on a per mile charge, you can work through those non-resident driver issues. But until you get to that point, then they'll still stay on the fuel tax.
Hmm. So what would you say to other states that are struggling with this issue, like Iowa is? Should we follow your example?
Well, I think it's time for every state to recognize that there's going to have to be a replacement of the fuel tax at some point. Oh, the numbers point in that direction. All of the estimates of fuel tax revenues are going down, steadily downward for the next 25 years. So they have to come up with a new solution. And if it's a per mile charge they want to look into, they've got to get some institutional knowledge into their agency. They've got to learn about it. They've got to prove that they know what they're doing with the local citizens. So I'd say start experimenting and getting into it. Oregon DOT is happy to help any state that goes forward. In fact, we're doing that now with the West, helping California, Colorado, Washington, those kind of states go forward, and they are.
Interesting. So I'm going to back up just a bit here and just ask, so how does, when somebody goes to the pump, how do you know that they're from out of state to be able to charge them the gas tax as opposed to someone else?
Well, the way this works right now is everyone would pay the gas tax up front, but then they get a credit against their mileage charge when they go to, when their bill comes in. So let me explain that. They would pay the gas tax with their fuel purchase, and then when they get their mileage charge bill in the mail or by email, they would have the mileage charge on it, and they would have a fuel tax credit on it automatically of what they've already paid. So it's a refund or rebate.
I see. Okay. So they'd basically get a credit on their bill for however many miles they've driven. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And until there's a full transition, it's got to be that way because you can't tell who.
Right.
Who is a mileage charge payer and who's not. And that will probably take some time. It could start with the highly fuel efficient vehicles paying the mileage charge. It could start with everybody after, say, the year 2020 is paying it. But there'll always be vehicles for a long time that won't pay the mileage charge, and they should pay the gas tax. And so you have to build this credit mechanism into it so that you can make both systems work at once at the same time. It's not complex at all. We've already proven it works very easily. So that's not an issue.
Interesting. Okay. Well, Mr. Witte, thank you so much for talking with me today. I really appreciate it.
I enjoyed it.
Jim Witte is manager of the Office of Innovative Partnerships and Alternative Funding at the Oregon Department of Transportation. Coming up, we'll hear what Paul Trombino, director of the Iowa Department of Transportation, had to say last week at a subcommittee hearing in the Iowa Senate, the first airing of the proposed gas tax increase at the Iowa State House.
In the end, I think what we have continually hear and what I hear all the time is you need a quality transportation system to have a quality economy in the state.
That's still ahead on River to River. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Catherine Perkins, sitting in for Ben Kiefer. We've been looking back this hour on the history of the debate over raising the gas tax in Iowa, something that hasn't been done since 1989, but that has been under discussion at the State House for the last several years. We've been looking back to figure out what may or may not be different about this year's debate, and joining me now to help us understand whether we're hearing anything new this year is IPR's State House correspondent, Joyce Russell. Thanks for being here, Joyce.
Hello, Catherine.
So let's start where we are today. A newly drafted bill to raise the gas tax has been introduced in each chamber. What happened last week with those bills?
in both the House and Senate, they cleared the first hurdle. They were up in the subcommittee in both the House and Senate. They bipartisan support there. So the bills are out there. People are using a lot of the same arguments, but some new ones because there's a few nuances in the bill. But it's basically a 10-cent per gallon gasoline tax increase.
Okay. So can you tell us a little bit more about that? Would it be phased in or does it go in the 10 cents all at once?
It goes in all at once. And that's one of the controversies about it. There are some people who stood up in the subcommittee and said, I'm not going to vote for this bill no matter what. Others said it would be more palatable if it were to be phased in. One person made the argument that consumers shouldn't have to absorb that all at once. And Representative Burns, the Republican in the House who is managing the bill, very outspoken supporter, said, well, don't tell me that because the gasoline retailers just raised their gasoline at 10 cents a gallon and we have to absorb that. So yeah, that's one of the ways that they could have softened the blow. But when you ask them about it, they say, "Well, look, we've been trying to do this for 5 years, and we've gone without $1 billion in these 5 years. If we'd started 5 years ago, maybe we could have phased it in. But we really need to do this now."
So who did lawmakers hear from as they began discussions in these subcommittee meetings?
The usual suspects, the road builders, the good roads people, counties, cities, but the opposition that surfaced in those subcommittees last week came from petroleum marketers. I guess that's not so surprising, but I hadn't really heard from them before. The truck stop people, convenience store, petroleum marketers and convenience stores of Iowa, they say that's going to hurt their sales if gasoline taxes go up.
Because the tax is actually lower in Missouri, right?
Well, it is lower. The gas is lower in Missouri. Diesel, if this passes, diesel will be cheaper in Illinois, but not gasoline. And Representative Burns was talking. He said this will not make us significantly different when you look at all of our neighbors. And he outlined all of the instances of states around us where they're also looking at raising the gasoline tax.
Hmm. So I understand the director of the Iowa Department of Transportation, Paul Trombino, has been testifying on this bill. We heard him earlier this hour saying he thought his department could do better with the dollars they already collect. But where does he stand on raising the gas tax this year?
Well, he is arguing in favor of the bill. Up until now, I asked Representative Burns about that, too. And I said, is Paul Trombino for this or not? And he said, Anybody who has responsibility for all of the roads in across the entire state of Iowa has to be in favor of raising $200 million for them. But he is now speaking out for the bill. But up until now, he has been far more measured. When the report first came out that the yearly shortfall is going to be $200 million. Well, the first approach was to find other savings within the Department of Transportation. And so that's what Mr. Trombino has been focusing on up to now.
There's also been some talk of raising other fees for vehicles that carry heavy loads, for instance, for farm machinery, that kind of thing. Is there anything in that bill or any other proposals that would do any of those things?
That's in the bill. That's in the that's one of the few things in addition to the gas tax that's in the bill. You know, the backers of this said we want to keep this simple, keep this bill simple, and it's fairly simple. But there are a few things like that increase in the fees for heavy equipment traveling on the roadways. I think that Representative Burns tells me that those folks realize that they do more damage on the roads than like me and my Prius or or anybody else, and that they've come around and they've just sort of recognized that there's room for raising that. Although that did come up in the subcommittee complaining about those increased fees.
Mm-hmm. You have to chuckle when you hear somebody say that they're going to keep a bill simple, because if you've ever read a bill, they are usually right. anything but simple.
Right.
So where is the leadership on this issue coming from? Lawmakers, the governor, legislative leaders?
Well, the leadership has been coming for a while from these two key lawmakers, Todd Bowman, a Democrat from Maquoketa in the Senate, and Representative Burns, who I've been referring to today. They've been strong leaders for this for quite some time. But now that a bill is out there, there's a true bipartisan spirit to get this done this year. And so all the backers of the bill tell me that all four leaders, House and Senate, Democrat and Republican, all four caucuses, as we say, and the governor, are behind this bill. And so it's well greased, but there's still, you know, some indication that they may not have the bipartisan votes in all four of those caucuses.
We're going to talk more about that in a minute, but let's start with the governor, because he drew some criticism last year from his Democratic opponent, Jack Hatch, and from some within his own caucus for not showing more leadership on the gas tax. In this year's Condition of the State Address, he walked around the issue a bit. So let's listen to that.
Together we can find common ground and pass a bipartisan plan to fund the systems critical to our state's vitality, Iowa's roads and bridges, and our broadband infrastructure. Building an infrastructure as strong as the future that we want Iowa must be a bipartisan priority this legislative session.
So there we heard him advocate forcefully for funding infrastructure this year, but he does not say two important words, gas tax.
No.
So what has the governor said about this issue?
Well, he has said pretty much what you just heard him say, that the need is there. We want to explore other options. And then as it became clearer that it was going to have a much better chance this year than in the past, he was asked directly, well, why don't you just come out and say you're for the gas tax? And more than once he said, then I would just be a target. And so it's pretty clear that if this bill passes, he's going to sign it.
He's not saying it publicly, but it sounds like he may be saying it in conversations with legislative leaders, because when we opened this session by talking with legislative leaders, we asked House Majority Leader Linda Upmeyer and Senate Majority Leader Mike Gronstahl about raising the gas tax. And when asked whether this was the year, here's what Representative Upmeyer had to say.
You know, I think this is as good a year as any, you know, but I think that discussion will continue to take place and perhaps gain some energy. A couple of things I think that have changed is the governor is being more vocal about its support. And as we know, the governor sort of has the biggest megaphone in the state. So more and more people will have those discussions. But I think additionally, other people are coming to the table. I think people that have some good ideas are bringing those forward. So I'm hopeful that people will be able to come to the table, take a look at this. We can have a genuine discussion and, you know, then we can up or down that kind of discussion. But I'm feeling like there are some things that have changed this year, and perhaps that gives it kind of a new opportunity.
So I suppose it's not surprising to hear Representative Upmeyer talking about the governor's support behind the scenes and that he's doing a good job of using his big megaphone, as she was talking about. So do you think it feels different in the House this year? Would you agree with her assessment of this?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot more momentum. It's, you know, it's going to happen. I mean, it's going to come to the floor for sure. And that's more than you could say in the past.
And let's listen to what Senator Gronstahl told us about where this stands or what the feeling about this issue is in his chamber.
I think there's probably a majority of our caucus that is in favor of dealing with transportation infrastructure, but it's not universal, and it's the same thing for the Republicans. I think there's a significant number of Republicans that are interested in pursuing this as well. But I've always said, roads don't know political boundaries. I came here to Des Moines to open this session. The first mile, I was on a Democratic road. The next 124 or 25 miles, I was on Republican roads, and then I was back on Democratic roads. They don't really know partisan boundaries, and if this is going to get accomplished, it has to be done in a broadly and deeply bipartisan way. And I think there is growing consensus, even amongst folks that have been reluctant on this subject, growing consensus that our transportation infrastructure is a problem. You know, you can save a few cents at the gas pump, but if you have to realign your car twice a year, you're not really saving money. And the challenge has been something like a gas tax or tax on fuel, direct tax on fuel, that makes the users pay for it. If you do other sources of fund, it makes Iowans pay for it, but out-of-state people don't have to pay for it. And about 25% of the gas tax is paid for by people that don't live in Iowa, but do use our roads. So I think people are growing, there's some growing acceptance of this, and it's probably a good time to do it when fuel prices are relatively modest.
Now, Senator Gronstall is always quick to point out that this issue is not a slam dunk in his caucus. Both in this conversation and other things, he has said, what are you hearing about why it may be unpopular with some Senate Democrats?
Well, anytime you raise taxes, it's going to be unpopular. And you know, look, this it is a legitimate argument that this is a regressive tax. And that argument is coming from people who don't usually care about whether taxes are regressive. But it is a regressive tax, and it will hurt consumers. It will hurt low-income people. So it's not surprising to me that there's resistance in the Democratic caucus.
So, you know, we've heard throughout this program, this issue does not seem to break down along party lines. So in which caucus do you think it may hit road bumps?
Well, the main lobbyists behind this have said more than once that, you know, that the goal here is to have a majority in all four caucuses so that the guilt is spread around House and Senate, Democrats and Republicans. And one of the main lobbyists on this has said more than once that he thinks that it will be Senate Republicans that will have the hardest time getting, you know, the majority of their caucuses. So in the Senate, that means there are 24 Republicans, so they have to get 13 of them to vote. Not 12, that's not a majority. That's mm-hmm. just half. They have to have 13 Republicans. And he seemed to think that that's the biggest challenge, is to get 13 Republicans to vote for it.
Mm. So what political wheeling and dealing can you tell us about behind the scenes of this issue? I mean, have promises been made about if we pass this, for example, then we can look at the gas tax?
Yeah, that was happening a couple of years ago when legislators were trying very hard to get a property tax cut, Republicans in particular, trying very hard to get a property tax cut through the legislature. And there were reportedly some promises from, you know, people who were reluctant to approve a property tax cut. There were apparently some promises that, okay, if I vote for your property tax cut, you have to vote for my gas tax increase. I mean, that's an indication of how this has been on the table for a while. And Representative Burns actually said on the transportation lobby day, he described this promise that was made, and he told the activists who were there, when you go across the street and talk to your legislators today, remind them of that promise.
Hmm. So if you were a betting woman, does a 10 cent per gallon increase in the gas tax get approved this year?
Boy, I think that because the leaders have all come out and for this, I think it will be kind of hard for them to not accomplish that in their caucuses, not twist the arms or whatever it takes to get that majority vote. So it's hard for me to imagine that scenario. but I'm not sure I would bet on it.
Stranger things have happened, right? Okay. Joyce, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Okay. Thank you, Catherine.
That's IPR Statehouse correspondent Joyce Russell. Iowa Department of Transportation Director Paul Trombino testified at an Iowa Senate subcommittee last week, the first hearing for the proposed 10-cent per gallon increase in the Iowa gas tax. Let's listen to what he had to say when questioned by lawmakers.
I just wanted to say thank you to all of you, the senators here, representatives also, for work on the bill. We at the department obviously are very much in favor of the bill. Transportation funding is very important to us. In the end, I think what we have continually hear and what I hear all the time is you need a quality transportation system to have a quality economy in the state. And I think that resonated from the comments that I've already heard today. And I think the bill addresses, most importantly, critical investments in the system. And it's not just on the state system. It's on the city system and it's on the county system, because we know each of those systems work jointly together, and the partnership that we have with those groups is critically important for us to really develop a system that meets business and citizens' needs, that improves quality of life in the state of Iowa. And the final piece that I just wanted to touch on is, I think the good thing about the bill is that it finds a way to get revenue from out of state. We're a crossroads state. That's not going to change. We're going to have a lot of movement that continues to grow in the future. All the projections on truck movement and freight movement across the state show significant growth up through 2040. And we need to capture revenue from that movement that goes through the state, and so that the citizens of the state, we're not bearing all of the cost, because a lot of that damage does come from that movement that comes through the state. And so I think that's one of the good things about the bill, because it helps address that, what I would call an imbalance that's currently in the road use tax fund as the funds come in. But thank you again.
A few questions for the director, just to clarify some things for folks, and be as brief as you can. Sure. On them, Director. The shortfall that was spoken of,
yeah.
You know, I think many of us that worked on this together had real serious concerns about down the road, as we saw projections 9 fiscal years out, that there'd be a little gap. We tried to address it, but it was the consensus of leadership that maybe that shouldn't be in it. We do have other revenues coming in from this. Will that be adequate to keep us at approximately $200 million?
Yeah, I think it gets us really close to the $215. What you talked about was oversized, overweight fees. That has been one of the biggest growth areas that we've seen, and I suspect that we'll see more of those in 16 and 17, especially with some of the very large movements that we go through. And as you indicated, that single permit is the largest one that we see, and we've had continual growth over the last few years in those, and we see that in the future.
Okay, two quick follow-up questions with that. First one is, I commonly get emails from constituents, why don't you just toll people? Stop trying to raise our gas tax, let's toll them. A real brief response to why maybe that's not a viable option for us.
First thing is, the feds don't allow us to toll, especially on the interstate system. It would not be allowed to toll the entire system. The only way for us to do that is if we added a lane on the interstate. I'm assuming the interstate would be the likely road where we would toll. And that's really used for congestion mitigation. It's not a funding mechanism. It's really to manage the amount of capacity and the congestion that you see on that system. It's not really a foundation of a revenue source. And I think if you look at other states, it's not a revenue source that is paid for that system. It's really used just to maintain it.
So the other idea out there is miles driven. I don't think we're ready for that. I've talked to you about that specifically. High administrative cost to implement something like that. And then one of the other concerns that I've heard is, you know, the competitiveness around the states. And I understand Missouri's got its own issues, and I'm not going to go with Missouri.
Yeah.
But talk to us about what you're hearing from Minnesota, Illinois, Wisconsin. What's your thoughts in regard to, you know, are we going to see movement around the other states? I mean, this is not just an Iowa problem. Could you give us a brief?
Every state is feeling pressure about transportation funding. And so my expectation is you're going to see a number of the states around us increase fundings. They, all of them had proposals on the table, including Missouri, and I suspect they will have to address theirs in the future also. So in addition, as we look at those rates, we're still in the mix. We're not going to be the highest. I don't see us that way at all. And that's true on the oversized, overweight fees. We actually have the lowest fees in the United States. We're still, all we're doing is bringing them up, and we'll still be less than the surrounding states.
That's Iowa Department of Transportation Director Paul Trombino testifying at an Iowa Senate subcommittee last week, the first hearing for the proposed 10-cent per gallon increase in the Iowa gas tax. River to River is produced by Claire Roth, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon. You can find this program as well as other past programs archived on our website at iowapublicradio.org. Email us anytime at rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Find us on Twitter at IPR Talk and like us on Facebook at Iowa Public Radio. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. We're here weekdays at noon. I'm Catherine Perkins. Thanks for joining us.